Rugby on Off the Ball
with Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
All right, lots for us to get our teeth into now, talking with Ronan O'Gara about the big stories of the week. Ronan, very good afternoon to you. How you doing?
Hi, Jar. I'm very well, thank you. Yeah.
Very good. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about that, actually, because reading your column this morning in the Examiner, always a great read on a Friday, you were talking about confidence, and I thought there was an unexpressed part of it was the fact that your team must be feeling pretty confident, having won the first three games of 2020.
Oh, well, yeah, I didn't even realise that. It's been good. You never get carried away to think you've turned the corner, but progress is definitely being made, and it's something we need to keep going. Momentum in sport is huge. Confidence among players is huge. Confidence among staff is very important as well. So we're going to be tested, obviously, tomorrow, but it's an exciting challenge and one we're looking forward to.
How do you define confidence, and when do you start understanding that players have it?
Fascinating subject for me. I've kind of remember after 100-odd caps, I don't know what it was, but I actually lost my confidence, and people couldn't understand what that looks like and how it can happen, but it can easily happen, and it can happen very quickly, and it can really erode away at your inside, and you pretend on the outside everything is fine, but that's not actually the case. And there's perfect examples of it. It's just very difficult, I think, especially in a country like Ireland, to probably comment on players, because essentially there's no real way of proving that, because they can argue it, but I'd have a fairly good idea watching players about, you can see whether there's natural flow to his game or there isn't a natural flow to his game. So, you know, I think as a coach, it fascinates me because it's the difference between believing in a structured game plan and giving them a framework, and them just going on autopilot playing on their instincts. I think when you mix up the two of them, you've got a really potent player, and it can take months to build up. And I think Arsene Wenger says you can lose it overnight.
So the fact that you've actually been through this and gone through the losing of it, and you know, you feel like you can diagnose it now in other players, when you're talking to your own players and you're coaching or you're working with players who you feel have lost it, what are you saying to them?
That's a great question. What am I saying to them? It's not a short conversation. I think a lot of it is watching and analysing and just listening. And sometimes you can be blown away by their honesty or their lack of honesty sometimes. But one word or one phrase might just really resonate with you, and that kind of gives you the work on for the next day. And you know, even as last week, I can remember on the training pitch, and you can actually just see when a guy is struggling. They're just he's probably overanalyzing, and that even paralysis by analysis. He's looking for the perfect game, and sometimes you just need to get kind of basics, and then hopefully a big play comes to you. But I think when you're seeking that, sometimes you force it and you create a bigger hole for yourself.
Yeah, I can completely understand exactly how that would happen. And I guess when you're in that scenario and you talk to a player, and it's about just making sure that you give them trust. Are you the type of coach who's going to pick a player who's lacking confidence in the hope that they're going to work through it? Or do you take them out of the firing line for a few weeks and let them get their confidence back in the training ground?
I think everyone is different. It's a very good question. I think that's about knowing your players, I think. And sometimes it's difficult to know your players if you're looking at old tapes, because you're looking at a player and you're not looking at the person. I think what makes a player is actually the character of the person as well. So I think in my short time already as kind of the head coach, I've seen both sides. I think sometimes you just got to take a guy out of there, and there's other times, depending on the position, you got to let him work it through, because taking him out can actually be more detrimental. And I think it is something that's it's so crucial, because usually the guy that you're potentially replacing him has more confidence, so it kind of defies logic what you're potentially doing by not removing him. But I think it's about understanding how you can break a player and how you can actually gain a huge amount of trust. And it's not too dissimilar potentially to the Cooney-Murray argument potentially coming up for Andy Farrell, and the fact that you have a guy over a whatever 9-10 year period who has shown he has the capacity to be the best in the world. At the minute, he wouldn't be at that level. So what is your decision making in probably A or B, keeping him in that position, or B, making a change?
Yeah, it is a really fascinating debate to be having right now at this moment. And Stephen Ferris was on with us during the week, and he made the excellent point that all those frontline Ireland players who've been taken out of their provinces for the last couple of months haven't had the opportunity to play any rugby, haven't had the opportunity to get their confidence and their flow back. And so we don't right now have a fresh memory of them playing at their very best. Whereas the players who weren't in the World Cup squad, of course they were playing every game because they're not part of the Ireland squad yet and they're not having their minutes managed. So there's this weird kind of catch-22 scenario where we want to see our best players playing to see if they're in form, but we haven't been giving them any game time to make sure that they're going to be fit to play in our big games.
Yeah, and I think that's something that'll probably be reviewed again, Ger. I think about that Christmas period, I think that was probably really important in terms of the minutes of certain players, I suppose, were and weren't getting. But fringe players, I think, need to be playing a little bit more, and some other players need to be playing more. I think, as I said a number of times on this program, I think if you're playing, especially as a number 10, 3 out of 4 weeks is ideal. I don't think you need to be getting more rest than that, because when you get into that flow state, everything happens so much easier for you. But you need to play games, and you need to play good games, and that opens up the argument too about the players that are playing for Leinster, they're destroying every opposition in front of them. How ready are they going to be for tough battles for Six Nations?
Yeah, it's really a double-edged sword. Just speaking of Andy Farrell and his potential style of play, Stuart Lancaster did an interview overnight with BBC Radio 5 Live where he was saying that he expects that the game plan that is going to be espoused by Mike Catt's team and by Andy Farrell's team is going to be very much closer in alignment to what Leinster are playing. Not exactly the same, he said there'll be wrinkles between the two teams, but is that your expectation and your understanding as well, that that's how Ireland are going to play, a bit closer to the Leinster style than they were under Joe Schmidt?
Well, if they play it as well as Leinster playing it, they'll be in a great space. I think, at first it was kind of a comment that stopped me, and then I suppose I reflected on it and I thought, and a lot of the teams are playing quite similarly in terms of, like, you know, you're either playing a kind of a 1-3-2-2 or you're playing a 2-4-2 and the little wrinkles off that. But how it looks so much better is that Leinster are winning collisions, and it's not two or three guys for Leinster. It's kind of potentially up to 30 players that are given the jersey on any given night that are any given game. That's where they're excelling. You look at their opportunity after 40 seconds against Leon, and they rip them up the right hand side with a good bit of vision, a bit of scanning, and just good execution of basic skills. And obviously, I think it was ruled out for ahead of the kicker for Luke McGrath's try. But they are a team that are absolutely ruthless. But I think maybe some people missed the point, but that they train for that. That's exactly how they train at every session. So for them, the game is nearly easier than some of the Stuart Lancaster training sessions. So I think, obviously, there's a lot of Leinster players that are key to the Irish team, but I think there's also a lot of, I would say, hidden gems under the radar in the Irish squad that we haven't seen in the green jersey yet, which makes it very exciting.
Who are you thinking of, or what kind of players, what role do you think they're going to have?
I was just flicking today on the bus and just looking at, is it the three young back rows that are essentially, I think two of them are uncapped. Is it Caelan Doris and
Max Deegan?
Yes, exactly. Like, they've been consistently good all season. You have the guy Penny, who seems a really good player, and obviously someone like Dan Levy is still injured. And then you have Peter O'Mahony, you have Standard, you have so much choice there, but it's going to be so difficult to... I also think the combination of who they pick in the back row is going to be crucial as well, because... the front five, I think it's obviously, apart from Hooker, I think there's a lot of players that are locked into positions there. So the back row seems to be an area, and it always is, where we'll be hugely competitive. And I think it'll be interesting to see what way Andy Farrell goes about it, because it's his era now, and It is a little bit similar, maybe coming off the defeat to or the two defeats in the World Cup to Japan and New Zealand, and the manner of them a little bit reminds me of this squad maybe of around 2000 when Warren Gatland kind of was the coach, and there was, I think it was a five new caps announced after the debacle in Twickenham for the Scottish game, and it really, I think, gave new energy. I think with the amount of good players playing in Leinster at the minute, I think some of them are gonna really see game time in the Six Nations. I'm convinced of that.
I'm gonna come back to that now. 1 second. Our rugby coverage is with thanks to Vodafone, Team of Us, everyone in. We were having that debate over the course of the last week there, Ronan, about the back row in particular, because you know he can make statements by who he picks. He could pick Deegan and Doris and Van der Fleer as his back row, and everybody would go, wow, that's unbelievably exciting. Or he could pick CJ Stander, Peter Mahoney and Van der Fleer as his back row, and everybody go, well, look, we understand that because it's the Scotland game and your job is to try and ease your way into this tournament and win it. The natural conservative thing to do would be to pick the back row you understand, back O'Mahony to get his form back CJ Stander to play well in an Ireland jersey again. What do you think he's actually going to do?
I don't know what he's going to do, obviously, but I would think, it depends on the number 10. Like, is Johnny going to be fit or not? Because he hasn't played a lot of rugby, so that's going to affect the number 9 situation. That obviously is going to affect the back row. He's not going to have 7... seven surprises. I think there will probably be up to 3. Well, what you determine as a surprise, but I think you'll have a few different faces in there than finished the last international. And I think it's a difficult one for Peter O'Mahony, for Sander, and the fact that you have young Tyros breathing down their neck, and I would say that probably the week of training before the actual Scottish game is going to be hugely important. But then the flip side of that is that there's so much experience there too, and if you're the coach, and I can only imagine how Andy Farrell is feeling, you want to get off to a winning start against Scotland at home, so that's where trust in your players comes into it too, and depending on his relationship with O'Mahony and Stander and how he views their current form, it's so difficult to see how he would look past. I would say most definitely not. I think that will be the toughest decision he will have. I think picking the combination in the back row. I think that's where he has huge flexibility and huge options. As you say, I think which probably the age profile of Murray, Sexton, Sander, O'Mahony. All of these guys aren't probably going to be there for World Cup. And I know that's a long time away, but all the other nations are looking like that. You look at someone like Maidar, who isn't even in the French squad, or Ouje. So I think it might be difficult for some people, but he will definitely have an eye out, say, for one of those two young Leinster back row starting in this Scottish game.
Yeah, and it feels like that would be an important statement as well, that like your current form is the thing that's going to get you in the team, as opposed to you were great for us and we know you're capable of being great again. And they're obviously such great professionals that they'll respond to that and take the challenge to the young lads who take their place.
Well, exactly, and that has to be the way I think. And obviously now there's such hula-bula or overreaction if an established player is left out, presuming that's the end of it. But as you say, it can be used to stimulate a reaction as well, on the presumption of the conversation you have with that player. For example, if he isn't happy with CJ at the minute, he said, right, I'm not starting you in this game, but I can guarantee you that you will have an opportunity through the Six Nations. And as long as that opportunity is given back to him, it's up to CJ to train the house down and to respond. And if he can't respond, then it's a weakness on his behalf. But like an awful lot of the good players in green, the natural response will be that it will be positive, and then I think you have a more competitive squad as a result of giving young guys opportunities.
So am I hearing your back row is Peter O'Mahony, Van der Fleer, Caelan Doris?
Um, you know, but I don't even know who the jumpers are in that. I know Peter O'Mahony's a jumper in that. I don't know if Caelan Doris or Van der Fleer. I know that balance is hugely important, and I'm not trying to bat it off, but I would say, from a rugby point of view, I would think yes.
Yeah. That look, I think even any sense of excitement around that would actually be a great conversation for us all to have. And I think that a new era would feel like a new era if there are some new exciting players. We're given to understand Sexton's going to be fit, so that kind of gives you another kind of sense of a comfort blanket there as well.
Well, and it also then probably creates a debate about who plays nine, because I don't think if Johnny's not fit to start, I think it would be crazy not to play Connor, because I think experience in halfback is crucial. And I think Connor Murray, I'm presuming it'll be with Ross Byrne, I think has been probably underappreciated over the last few months. I think he's really had an impressive season ever since missing out in the World Cup. And he's been, you know, it's hard, I think, for him to get the full appreciation of what he's doing, because they have such a juggernaut of a team. But like, when Johnny plays, obviously he has such high standards and he plays well, but it's exactly the same result and performance for Leinster when Ross Byrne plays. So I think he deserves huge credit for that, and he's maturing well. He's taken on the line so much better than he has in the past. And so, you know, I mean, if Johnny's fit, it creates a little bit of a possibility of having that debate about the number nine. But for me, I think for knowing probably the character of Connor, I don't think you need to probably sit him out of the team to get a response. I think what people are probably forgetting is the importance of round five and six in the Heineken Cup. So round five was Ulster Claremont, and as close as a test environment as you get, Cooney went to Claremont, and I didn't think he was on the pace anywhere near. He has been, obviously, in rounds 1-4 when he was on fire. So you're talking about current form, but current form will be tomorrow's game for him is absolutely crucial. Otherwise, I don't think there'll be any question marks about who starts against Scotland, because they're both the same age. Cooney is 29, Conor Murray is 29, so Conor is 80 caps and has a lot of credit in the bank, and I agree his form isn't where it needs to be and hasn't been, but I'm sure he appreciates now that it's a realistic threat of his position being up for grabs as opposed to speculation. So I would say it'll be interesting to see how he replies against the Ospreys and in training, and then if you get to go against Scotland.
Yeah, and what a good thing that is for Irish rugby. Listen, I know you're en route from Stansted to Exeter for the game tomorrow. Your flight was delayed 4 hours. Does that affect preparation? Do you have to have a conversation with everybody about that, or is it just a pain in the hole and you forget about it and you move on?
Both.
Right.
No, it did, obviously. But we're lucky, actually, in La Rochelle, the training ground is near. So we had many captain's run penciled in today because of the we took a it was a non-charter flight, so we just went on the commercial route. So it actually gave us the opportunity. The staff in the airport let us out. We went back to training session, had a walk through, and had a lovely brunch, and then back to the airport, so it worked out okay. So,
very nice.
Everything is great.
One thing struck me, I've been looking at pictures of La Rochelle recently. Is it not too nice a part of the world to live in to have a grizzled rugby team? Is everybody not like lying around like it's San Diego the whole time?
No. I think I was probably in a haze arriving from the Crusaders in the middle of August, and it was full of tourists and good weather, and I was up to my eyeballs at work, and I didn't appreciate it. But yeah, it is a lovely part of the world to live in. But no, it's kind of addressed by the president that when you sign on here, there's a little bit more expected than just having a good life in La Rochelle.
Right, fair enough. Well, I hope you're managing to do both, and I hope the confidence of the team continues to flow after this week. Thanks a million for joining us.
You come on. Thanks, George. Good to chat. Cheers. Thank you.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.